We will begin with opening statements from candidates running for City Council Seat B, Thomas Bell and Brenda Baker. You will each have 2 minutes to tell the voters who you are and why you're running for council. We'll start with you, Councillor Bell.
Thank you. Hello, my name is Thomas Bell, and I am running for City Council. In January of 2020, Council appointed me to Seat B, vacated by Councilman Finch. It has been an honor to serve the community for the last 9 months. As many of you may have read in my candidate statement, I have lived and worked in this community for the past 19 years. I own a home in the Valley and have three awesome children who have attended and graduated from Unalaska City Schools. Before I was appointed to City Council, I served on the Planning Commission, and I have also, as an ILWU member, served as a labor representative and shop steward. Unalaska is a beautiful, awesome place to live, and I've had the opportunity to explore this island from English Bay all the way down to Chernofsky Harbor and beyond. I think a big picture perspective of this, along with my experience in local government and simply life experience, gives me a big picture view of the potential of this place. The city most recently signed a power purchase agreement with OCCP to develop geothermal power for the city of Unalaska. This project alone could open the door for diversification of our local economy. There are many conversations and decisions that lie ahead, and I would like to continue to be part of that process. Thank you.
Thank you. And Ms. Baker?
My name is Brenda Baker, and 5 years ago I moved to Unalaska sight unseen. Did not realize how beautiful the surroundings were. But I think that the beauty of Unalaska is in its diversity of the people living, working, and traveling here. On multiple occasions, I've seen how this community rallies together to support Unalaskans in their time of need. That, above all else, has inspired my call to serve on the City Council. Many special interests are already well served on the current and past councils, but my desire is to be the voice for the community. I believe all Unalaskans should have a voice. For the past 25 years, I have worked in logistics. Problem solving at a high and creative level has been part of my experience during this time. Prior to my move to Unalaska, I worked for 17 years at Horizon and Alaska Airlines, starting on the ramp before moving to the AOG desk, which stands for aircraft on the ground, meaning I have to think quick and get parts where they need to go to get little Timmy to Disneyland. I worked simultaneously within maintenance control, but I also worked for FEMA, which is a federal emergency management agency, in Region 10, covering Washington, Oregon, Idaho, and Alaska. During that time, I had to travel, assess different disasters, and again, quick on my on my feet, and get problems solved. Prior to that, when I was going to school to get my emergency management degree, I was handpicked by the cadre manager to work in the mitigation division for my ability to think outside the box and problem-solving abilities. I contributed to the FEMA mitigation handbooks for windstorms, winter storms, earthquakes, and tsunamis. Little did I realize this knowledge would come in handy living in Unalaska. I would really love to serve on the City Council, and I appreciate it.
All right, well, thank you for your opening statements, and now we'll move on to questions. So again, listeners can submit questions by calling 581-1888, that's 581-1888, or emailing candidates@kucb.org. With all questions, please be respectful, and please try to ask open-ended questions that go beyond a yes or no answer. We'll get to as many questions as we can, but we've already received quite the number from the community. So to get started, we're in the midst of a global pandemic. And while Unalaska still has no known cases of community spread of COVID-19, officials don't think this will end anytime soon. What do you think of the current local measures that the city has enacted to protect public health? And to follow that, as A season approaches and the island experiences an influx of workers, how do you think the city should move forward? Councillor Bell, we'll start with you, and you have 2 minutes.
Moving forward, the measures that have been enacted by City Council to this point have proved to be effective measures. Most of the spread that has, or any positive cases that have come in, have primarily been caught during the quarantine period, and have kept community spread out of here. Continued use of face masks, the quarantine period, social distancing, have all appear to work, and council looks at it every 2 weeks to see if there's any changes. I know we had a discussion at the last council meeting, if there's been changes in the science, or, with lots more data to go on, whether these measures need to change or not, and that will be continued to be looked at in the future. Thank you.
All right, thank you, Councilor Bell. And Ms. Baker, you have 2 minutes to respond.
Okay. I fully agree with Councilman Bell there. Everything that we've been doing has seemed to have worked. It's, the spread has been limited, which is great. And I think that, the community as a whole has always been cognizant of safety of others when they're sick. This obviously is very unique. And again, I agree with everything that he's saying. On my end, with what I do, we have to be very cognizant of the safety of people coming into the office and whatnot. And safety measures within the plants and with the quarantining. Yeah, I agree with Councilman Bell on all of that.
All right, well, thank you. Mm-hmm. So now we have a question from a listener who says that for several months, the city has maintained a mandatory 14-day quarantine for travelers arriving into the city, largely based on the recommendation of the clinic. During the council meeting this week, the clinic stated their own COVID-19 plan only requires a 5-day quarantine. Given that, for the safety of the community, the clinic representatives are still recommending a full 14-day quarantine without any allowance to minimize quarantine time using testing. Do you have any concern that clinic personnel can begin work after only 5 days of arrival? And do you see any issues with this disparity? And I'd just like to clarify that their 5-day quarantine also includes a 5-day test strategy for clinic staff with daily vitals checks and continual use of personal protective equipment, just so everyone's aware. Ms. Baker, we will start with you this time. You have 2 minutes.
I would have to say I would like to continue with the 14-day quarantine. There have been cases people have been here for 7 days and they've been tested and they test positive. If the clinic is recommending the 5 days, then I say that we go forward with just continue with the social distancing and face masks. And just be like, again, I can't stress it enough, just be cognizant of who you're coming into contact with. And I would just go from there.
All right, well, thank you. And if anyone needs me to repeat a question, also just let me know. The clinic does a 5-day quarantine for their own staff that they are considered essential workers. What are your thoughts on that, Councilmember Bell?
That was a concern that was raised from a community member that maybe we could go to a 5-day quarantine period because the clinic is doing it. However, the clinic, in their mitigation plan, does do testing, but they also, the medical staff, use full PPE, meaning N95 masks, face shields, protective clothing, so in order to mitigate those problems. Unless we're all willing to PPE up the same, I think the 14-day quarantine still makes the most sense.
All right, thank you. Mm-hmm. So we're going to move on from public health for a minute and focus on alternative energy, which is a lobbying priority for the city. Unalaska recently signed a power purchase agreement with Unalashka Chena Power to develop the geothermal resource at Makushin Volcano. And a listener has a two-part question here, so let me know if you need me to repeat something. With the recent geothermal power purchase agreement, the city is locked into purchasing 100 megawatt hours of electricity every year for 30 years from OCCP. If conditions change and Unalaska loses 20 to 30% of the industrial power demand, resulting in the city being unable to sell 100 megawatt hours of electricity, how would you plan to deal with that issue so the burden does not fall on the residential ratepayers? Maybe we'll start with that and save part two for after. Let me know if you need me to repeat something. Councillor Bell, we will start with you.
That's, during that whole discussion, that was really a concern of mine. The city only sells, 40 million kilowatt hours a year at present, and we've signed a contract to purchase 100 million kilowatt hours a year. We do have some time before this agreement goes in place, before the lights go on, so to speak. So we do have time to bring new customers on. A suggestion that I would be looking at as a counselor would be that the city bring on a, for lack of a better title, a resources manager that could handle, that would oversee natural resources. It would be more than fisheries, power agreements and other alternative energies that we may develop, such as wind or tidal or any other, or solar or anything like that. It would be up to the city really to maintain a customer base, because we do have a contract and we are purchasing that power at a certain price. So it will fall on the ratepayers, any difference between what we are selling and what we are purchasing. Thank you.
All right, well, thank you. And Ms. Baker, do you need me to repeat anything? Or?
No, I have to be completely honest because I'm not 100% up on the whole geotherm issue, but it is something that I am willing to research, and I'm gonna have to defer to Tom on this because, he clearly is involved in it. But I do agree with everything that he's saying.
All right, well, thank you. Mm-hmm. And then part two to this question was, that currently there's no requirement for industrial electrical users, primarily processing plants, to purchase geothermal power from the city. Is making a requirement for industrial electrical users to buy geothermal power something you would consider as a councilor?
I'm not sure that I would consider that, forcing someone to buy power from the city is not necessarily a direction that I am in favor of going. However, as a big picture moving forward, when we start considering changes in environment, global warming and all that, is the city at some point making an initiative that we commit to going to a certain amount of green energy and bringing the businesses and power users in the community along with that to reduce our carbon footprint.
All right, well, thank you. Ms. Baker, do you have a response?
Again, I'm not 100% up on this, and I will be. Forcing somebody to buy something that, they don't want to, I think is unfair. But if it will reduce, like he was saying, carbon footprint and whatnot, then I would have to agree with it.
All right, well, thank you. Mm-hmm. And so moving on from geothermal for a second, the city is also involved in a wind energy project, like you mentioned. The city installed 3 MET towers, or meteorological towers, on Hog Island, at Veronica Lake in Pyramid Valley, and on Bunker Hill to monitor wind for, I think, 18 to 24 months. The city's projected to finish gathering data in October and develop a final report. A listener asks, assuming the soon-to-be-released wind energy study finds that Unalaska has a viable wind energy resource, do you think Unalaska should continue to pursue wind energy in addition to having committed to buy 30 years of geothermal power? Ms. Baker, we'll start with you.
Yeah, absolutely. Wind is a great source of power, natural power, and I say for sure, yeah.
All right, thank you. And Councillor Bell, you have 2 minutes to respond.
I believe the city should hedge their bets. The geothermal, the light switch hasn't been turned on yet, so there's still a question mark there. There's a whole bunch of things that could delay that project or change it between now and I think the start date is 2024. The other opportunity would be that this geothermal attracts other users to this community, and that wind energy then, that we would have a greater demand and we would need that wind energy. So yeah, I would continue to pursue it.
All right, thank you. And now moving on a bit, the pandemic has altered timelines and led to cancellations of some major projects on the city's capital and major maintenance plan. What do you consider to be Unalaska's most important capital projects, and please explain? Councillor Bell, we're gonna start with you this time. You have 2 minutes.
There's many that are important. The first one that comes to mind would be the Captain's Bay Road project. You know, if we want to get self-producers online with geothermal, there are some utility upgrades that need to be done there. For years, I've driven that road as a truck driver, and I've always been concerned about the dead man's corner there, as it's called, and the potential for, you know, someone to get injured or, you know, or worse there. So straightening out that road and redoing it would definitely be a priority. And that one comes to mind first, so thank you.
All right, well, thank you. And Ms. Baker.
I would have to say getting the airport up and running, it's very important. And everybody here knows it's very hard to get in and out of here, especially lately. We've had to look at alternate, you know, ways to get in and out of the island. I'd like to see money spent on improving the length of the runway, and you know, it could possibly attract larger airlines, which would free up the inability to be able to get in and out of here, which is very important to people. You know, you've got doctor's appointments and whatnot, and we all know the weather doesn't always cooperate, but if it is cooperating and we can get flights in and out, I just think that people would like to see that a little bit more. And I agree with the Captain's Bay as well. I've had to drive it in the wintertime. It's like, no, no.
All right, thank you. And following up on that, we have a question from a listener who asks about the Captain's Bay Road project. They say it's the largest project on the CMMP, listed at $59 million. It's also listed as a top priority for state and federal funding. Absent state and federal funding, do you think the city of Unalaska should take on the financial burden of this project? Why or why not? Ms. Baker, we'll start with you. You have 2 minutes.
Well, it is very important, so I would have to say yes. You know, it's getting in and out of there, potholes, the slickness in the wintertime. Yeah, I would say yes to that.
All right, Councillor Bell.
I'll say yes to it too. Part of that project is, and a large portion of it is utilities. Extending utilities beyond westward. It would also expand our water storage. Currently, right now, they can only run the tank down so far because of supplying other customers. So it would increase our water storage, which future growth, water is going to be an important factor in that. So yes, I would still move forward with that project.
All right, thank you. And another project that has been had considerable discussion on the council that has been on the CMMP for a long time, what was canceled earlier this year amid uncertainties from the coronavirus pandemic, was the estimated $8 million renovation and expansion of the public library. This is from a listener, they ask, do you believe the city should continue to plan to expand the Unalaska Public Library? Councillor Bell, we'll start with you.
Yes, I believe we should. That was when the library was originally built. That was part of the original plan, was to expand it at some point. The library is a very important part of our community. It serves a lot of purposes, and I voted to approve the additional funds. My only reservations with that whole project was where the costs came in. And I think as a bigger picture, the council needs to look at ways to keep costs down on some of these major projects. But yes, I I do believe we still need to move forward with library expansion.
All right, thank you. And Ms. Baker?
I'm gonna have to go with no. I mean, I do realize that, you know, library is very important. People, you know, they go there for obviously books and to study and whatnot, but I think that we have more important things to fix before we move forward with that expansion.
Okay. As a follow-up to that, can you speak a little bit to what other projects you think we should move forward with?
Well, the Captain's Bay, the wind, and of course the airport.
All right, thank you. Mm-hmm. And for listeners who are just tuning in, you could submit questions to our candidates by calling 581-1888, that's 581-1888, or emailing candidates@kucb.org. Okay, moving away from the CMMP projects for a minute. As you know, Dutch Harbor has been the number one fishing port in the nation in terms of the amount of seafood landed for more than 20 years. A listener has a question about, capital projects that mainly support the fishing industry, but that are funded by the City of Unalaska. They say, Unalaska recently spent about $5 million on a laydown yard adjacent to the Matson Crane and City Dock. To date, there has been no meaningful use or revenue generated from that city-funded project. Do you think the city performs the proper amount of vetting of capital projects that support industry? Why or why not? Councillor Bell, you have 2 minutes to respond.
I'll respond directly to that expansion of land there. The intent moving forward was to put out a request for proposals for that land use, and that kind of coincided with our COVID pandemic here, and so that has been delayed. But at some point, yes, the city will move forward to secure revenues from those additions, the city dock expansion and the laydown area.
And just a little pushback against that again, do you think the city performs the proper amount of vetting on capital projects that support industry in general, maybe not specifically that one?
I believe so. I'm going to refer back to that project.
Okay.
Because it was mentioned in some other council meetings, but you know, that project, the existing dock that was there was in bad shape. It needed to be replaced. And the replacement cost, if I remember correctly, was like $23 million to do that. So it wasn't a big stretch to spend that extra money to make a facility that it was more usable and that would generate more income. So I think, especially in that case, there was a good amount of forethought put into that project.
All right, thank you. And Ms. Baker?
I have a question for you because I saw it being built and I was always wondering what it was for. What is it for? Because as a member of the community, you know, I would like to know, and I don't know if the community is involved in a vote and how things are spent, but what exactly is that for?
As stated before, the dock was in bad shape. The pilings were corroding out, and it hadn't been done anything with it in a long time.
We're talking about the whole city dock.
But the whole city dock itself increased the amount of dock frontage.
Right.
So therefore it could increase the amount of income generated through the Ports Department.
For that, yes, I agree. The city dock, it was in bad shape. I'm not really quite sure as far. I think you were talking about the expansion that went further.
It's a yard adjacent to the Matson Crane and city dock.
And like I said, as a member of the community, I don't know what it's supposed to be for. Our boat's going to tie up to it. Did the community have a say in how this was going to, if this project should move forward?
And if you are elected to city council, do you think that an extra amount of vetting of capital projects that are related to industry will need to happen
absolutely.
Within council?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, well, moving on from that, but another question related to the fishing industry. A listener asks, why do you think the city, or where do you think the city could save money if there was a 25% loss of revenue due to changes in the fishing industry and loss of fish tax funds? I know we've spoken a bit about this on council already, the fish tax funds, but we will start with Ms. Baker.
Can you repeat the first part of the question? I'm sorry.
Where do you think the city could save money if there was a 25% loss of revenue due to changes in the fishing industry and loss of fish tax funds?
Honestly, I gotta be honest, I don't know, but it is something that I would get to know and of course bring that to the city, to the council.
All right, thank you. Mm-hmm. Councillor Bell.
That is a good concern, and it's something that was on my mind before I even got on council, is, you know, where are the wastes in the city? Are there costs that can be cut? I would imagine if that loss of revenue happened, staff would have to do quite a bit of work to see where any cuts would be prudent. I would imagine it would probably delay some of our capital projects. And of course, you know, the other side of that is, you know, looking for other sources of revenue, whether it's federal, state, or attracting other businesses into the community. All those could help mitigate that.
All right, and thank you. And a little bit shifting topics to kind of diversifying what we have here in Unalaska. The military presence here. One of the city's federal lobbying priorities is to seek a larger Coast Guard presence as marine transportation increases in the region. Senator Dan Sullivan said last year that he wants to develop more Arctic security infrastructure in coastal communities, an IRT, or Innovative Readiness Training team from the Army's Civil Affairs Command was recently on island to build relationships with local stakeholders and to assess community needs and identify potential solutions to those needs. The Navy and Marines have performed Arctic readiness exercises in the region lately. Would you support a greater military presence in Unalaska, be it Coast Guard, Navy, or another branch? Please explain why or why not. Councillor Bell, you have 2 minutes.
A greater military presence would really be a discussion I would love to see as a community as a whole. You look at a lot of the other communities around the country where you have large military presence. There's definite benefits because of the monies that come into that community, but it also brings other problems. You know, it expands that community to where, you know, this is a small community here, and it may be that, you know, a lot of people here want to keep it a small community. Military presence, larger populations bring other strains on the resources of the area. To a small degree brings in crime and things like that. So there's some positives and there are some negatives. The Coast Guard, I would love to see a greater Coast Guard presence here, whether we had something stationed here. Just on a smaller scale, we have a lot, there's more boats, small boats in this town than I've ever seen in the last 20 years. And it just gives a little more of a sense of reassurance to know that the Coast Guard's here if someone has a problem somewhere around the island and that there is some kind of response available.
All right, thank you. Ms. Baker?
He took my answer. But I do agree. You know, this is a very small community. With a greater presence, it gives a sense of security, you know, to have military here, especially, you know, if you think about the, you know, World War II, everything that happened. But again, you got a chance of more crime. You have a chance of, you know, especially during the pandemic, of that coming here and affecting the other members of the community. But again, a Coast Guard, I think, would be great to expand just due to the fact that, you know, we have had a lot of tragedies lately. And I think it would be a great idea.
Thank you. And then kind of a follow to that, if the military presence does increase, what do you think Unalaska would have to do to prepare for something like that? Councillor Bell.
I guess that would depend on the size of the military presence and what branch of the military. There's a lot of variables there. You know, one of the things that you would think about, or first thing that comes to mind, is resources such as power, water, you know, landfill. I mean, that's another capital project we could get into there too. there's a lot of variables there, so that's kind of a hard question to answer without knowing a little more information.
All right, thank you. Ms. Baker, do you have a response? You have 2 minutes.
You know, I would say that it would create jobs within the community if they decided to build, a base. There's been talk about building a base on the other side of the island. I think that would be a great idea because, like I said, it would create more jobs, but then we would have to think about how we would power them and what Mr. Bell was saying.
All right, well, thank you. And shifting again, there's been a lot of discussion lately about diversity and representation in institutions. A listener asks, considering the diversity of the community, do you see a problem in the fact that all the department directors are white? And as a follow to that, as a council member, what would you do to ensure you are representing a diverse population and viewpoints? We will start with Ms. Baker this time.
Great. I agree. The council could be a little bit more diverse. How I would go about that, I'm not quite sure, but as a council person, I think that I would just get within the community and hear their problems and do what I can, you know, taking their backgrounds into consideration to make them a voice to be heard within the council.
All right, and just the first part of that question also, do you see a problem in the fact that all department directors in the city are white?
That's a hard one. I do and I don't, but I think what it comes down to for me is, just having them step forward and doing what I'm doing, which I'm really out of my comfort zone by running, but people just need to step up and make their voice heard and get in there.
All right, thank you. And Councillor Bell, you have 2 minutes.
Could you go ahead and repeat that, the question?
Oh, yeah. The question is, considering the diversity of the community, do you see a problem in the fact that all the department directors are white? And as a follow to that, as a council member, what would you do to ensure you are representing as diverse a population and viewpoints as you can?
I think it speaks to a bigger problem is community involvement, and I'm going to say I don't really have a great answer for it. We look at the race that's going on here. There's only 2 of us, running for this seat. The other seat is uncontested. There's just been a lack of involvement in either local government, the school board's the same. We have 1 uncontested seat, or basically 2 uncontested seats there. I think the bigger picture would be looking at how we get more community involvement in local government, school boards, clinic boards, and I think that would be a good discussion moving forward. Thank you.
And along those same lines, we have a follow to that that just came in. How would you reach out to marginalized communities? How would you ensure that you understand the needs of Unalaska's underserved populations, such as immigrants, non-English speakers, the elderly, or low-income households, who may not be able to or may not feel welcome to participate in our local political processes? How would you make sure their interests are represented? Councillor Bell, we'll start with you this time.
As far as community input, I've been vocal to both the city manager and other members of council on ways that we can get more community input. I don't necessarily look at it as we need more minority input or marginalized segments of society input. It's just input in general. At the end of the day, I look at everybody as we're all in this game together, and we all depend, no matter what the color of your skin or the group that you may belong to, we all want to be healthy and happy in the end, and we all want our kids to be healthy and happy in the end. And I think just keeping that in mind, I can move forward with that.
All right, thank you. And Ms. Baker, you have 2 minutes to respond.
Again, I agree with Mr. Bell, who's very intelligent. I also agree that, you know, I see people, I don't see races as probably as I should, because I just feel we're all one. But we also do have to realize that we do have a very diverse community, and as such, you know, you have to reach out. The pandemic, you know, of course, has limited it, but I think that community barbecues, I know that might sound funny, but, you know, it's a way to bring people together and discuss the problems within their circle. And I would definitely like to see that moving forward.
All right, thank you. Mm-hmm. And shifting now to financials again, we have a question from a listener that says, do you think the current city budget is fiscally conservative, about right, or fiscally extravagant? And can you back up your answer with specific examples? Ms. Baker, we'll start with you.
I'm going to I would have to research that before I can fully answer it. So I'm just going to leave it at that.
All right, thank you. Councilor Bell?
I'm not sure I'd characterize either one. I would lean against saying it's fiscally conservative. There's been an effort by, you know, at least me and several other councilors, to try and manage costs of projects and do our homework basically on what, you know, what projects are coming up, where the money's being spent, and ways that we can do things more efficiently. There's, when we get into budget issues, that's a big issue, and it gets pretty complicated. I've spent a lot of time looking over, you know, large folders full of budget numbers, and there's more to be looked at there.
All right, thank you. And moving on to a local fisheries related question, would you be in support of the city spending up to several million dollars on projects targeting fish run enhancement on local lakes? Mr. Bell, we'll start with you.
Yes, I would. I know there's been talk of Summers Bay or the Unalaska Lake here with the silt runoff that has been slowly clogging up the lake, and that will be a couple million-dollar project to remove some of that silt. I would be in favor of doing that, keeping these salmon runs healthy and strong here. I would definitely support moving forward on some of those projects.
All right, thank you. And Ms. Baker?
I agree. I would like to see it. It's a good source of, you know, people, you know, the community. It's something that they love to do. And yeah, I would love to see it move forward.
Thank you. And we have a question here specifically for Ms. Baker. It says, in your candidate statement, you say that, quote, many special interests are already well served on the current and past councils, but my desire is to be a voice for the community, end quote. Which segments of the community do you feel are underrepresented, and how will you remedy that?
You know, this is probably going to sound kind of not so nice, but you know, I think that there are a lot of decisions that are made without the community having a vote. And being on the city council, I would make sure that their voices are heard, and, you know, before we move forward with projects.
All right, so we just had another question come in, and it says, among the projects on the city's list of state and federal lobbying priorities this year are the stabilization of commercial flights at our airport, reliable high-speed internet support and state ferry system support to a Coast Guard presence, and the $52 million Captain's Bay Road Improvements Project. What do you think are the most important federal and state lobbying priorities this year? Mr. Bell, we'll start with you.
Airport. Unequivocally, the airport. Not having reliable air service here it's been a detriment to this community. you know, once we're past this pandemic, I hope to see that, you know, we can diversify a little bit and see a little more tourism, you know, fishing charter types businesses, which rely on easy access to this island and some of the surrounding islands. Access to medical care for, you know, local people. Just being able to move in and out of here is important to industry too. I hate to, the recent tragedies, you know, may hopefully motivate lawmakers to put some money towards this airport once we have a master plan, and I hope that happens. Unfortunately, you know, I hate to see that a tragedy motivates people to spend money. So, thank you.
All right, thank you. Ms. Baker?
I agree. You know, my big thing, like I said, has been the airport. If we can, you know, get it to where it needs to be, lengthening the runway, you know, and getting larger airlines to come in. If we get larger airlines, we would have to have TSA. Again, it would create local jobs, which would be, you know, beneficial. Also, the internet, we got to fix that. And cell service.
All right, well, thank you. We have another question from a listener here that says, City Council passed a resolution this week to give a utility credit to utility customers. This was to help with the higher expense for utilities, groceries, internet, et cetera, and loss of wages due to COVID-19. Do you think there should be a similar resolution for other citizens that have likewise been affected by COVID-19 but do not pay utilities directly? Their utilities are included with their rent or otherwise provided, but they still have an increase in internet, grocery, and other expenses, and a loss of wages due to quarantine. Do you think the recent council resolution favors one group of citizens and excludes others? We'll start with Ms. Baker on this one.
I do. I do feel it excludes others. You think about people, you know, out at Westward or Alyeska, you know, that everything is included. My utilities are included. You know, and I think that if you're going to give money to one group to support what, you know, they need, then you should give it to everyone.
All right. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And Councillor Bell?
Yes, I would love to see that money, what the remaining monies or future monies, spread around throughout the community a little more. The challenge you run into, because it was an idea that was brought up ahead of time, is giving, you know, everyone that lives in the city of Unalaska or everyone that's a resident a percentage of that monies. The problem we run into is there's no database and no way of figuring out who those people are and how to get them money. Using the recipients of PCE credit as a basis for dispersing funds is a tangible way of doing that. We know who those people are, we know how to give that credit, and it's a way to put money back into the community. That CARES Act money was to stimulate local economies and try and mitigate some of the costs of the COVID pandemic. And, you know, giving it to PCE customers, qualifying customers, puts that money directly back into this community. So, thank you.
All right, well, thank you. You have a rebuttal?
Yeah, I'm just curious as to, and maybe you can answer this, why can't we do something like, you know, that the federal government did by giving us the $1,200? Why can't we just come up with a sum and give it to the residents of the city?
Understanding who the residents are
is difficult.
Difficult because there is no database out there that says, you know, that you and me are definitely residents of this community. There's a transient population that moves in and out. Some of those people have PO boxes here, some of them don't. Just having a database that makes that possible, it doesn't exist, and it would create a tremendous amount of cost in labor for the city to try and generate that.
I agree.
And that has been discussed at council in the past. And shifting now a little bit, we're coming to the end of our question section, but what local nonprofits have you been involved with or volunteered for, and do you attend local nonprofit fundraisers? We'll start with Councillor Bell.
Most of what any of the nonprofit or type stuff that I've been involved with, you know, the wine tasting that CVB does every year, that's a great event. A lot of people enjoy that event, and I do too. I haven't been directly involved with a lot of volunteers stuff since all my children have graduated. So that really draws you into a different group of people and gets you more involved in, you know, those type of events.
Thank you. Ms. Baker?
You know, since I've moved here, I really haven't gotten as involved as I would like to with the community, but in the past, I mean, I was a suicide hotline counselor and a domestic violence counselor. With the airlines, I was also a critical incident response person. I was actually the head of it, you know, which provided counseling to people going through hard times. I'd like to see something like that, if possible, come here, but I would definitely like to get more involved with those types of things here.
Okay, and our local organization for that is USAFE, for Alaskans Against Sexual Assault and Family Violence, and they do amazing work in our community. And it looks like we have 1 minute left, and so my final question that came in from a listener, and I think we have time to finish with it. What is your favorite book and why? We'll start with Ms. Baker.
Gosh, I read so much, it's really hard to say what my favorite book is, but I'd say anything by James Patterson.
All right, thank you. Councillor Bell.
Green Eggs and Ham. Sorry, I couldn't come up
and
with
a title. Of what's your reason why for that one?
Because I would eat them in a truck, and I...
All right, well, thank you. And that's about all the time we have for City Council Seat B candidates. Now they'll have an opportunity to make their closing statements. This is your chance to share any final thoughts with the voters before they head to the polls. You each have 2 minutes, and this time we'll start with Ms. Baker. Go ahead. Okay.
Well, I really appreciate everybody listening to me, just kind of fumbling through again. This is very new to me, but it's a challenge, and I'm up for it. I would love the honor of being the voice of a community and sitting beside some really amazing people that are already doing some great things for the community. Like I said, it would be a personal honor for me to be able to represent the city for their needs and their questions. And all I got to say is get out and vote. If you can't get out and vote, you can do it online. You can email it in. You can fax it in. You can do your ballot, your absentee ballot. Every vote counts. And just if you want your voice heard, then vote.
Thank you. And Councillor Bell, you have 2 minutes.
I was going to give a short closing statement, but I did want to touch on one subject because it's been brought to my attention, and that is the vote on the power purchase agreement. There was those that thought that maybe I was against that project, and I would say to them that I wasn't against that project. I'm all in favor of that project. I love that. I think that's a great project moving forward. And The reasons for me voting, because I was the only no vote on that vote for the power purchase agreement, wasn't necessarily that I was against the project. It was that I thought that the city could get a little better deal than what was being negotiated. You know, the city agreed to purchase a certain amount of power where we don't currently sell that much power now. You know, there is the opportunity to sell that power between now and then, and I look forward to that, to where that goes. I didn't agree with the amount of risk that the city was taking on And my other thought with that at the time was that was a $500 and some odd million project that I wanted to see a little more public input on it than what had been done at the time. But other than that, I'm now that this power purchase agreement is signed and we're moving forward on it, I'm excited to see where it goes. The rest of my closing was is I've enjoyed my time on the council. I've learned a lot, and I appreciate all the support that I've gotten, and I'm asking for your vote on October 6th.
Thank you. Well, thanks to Thomas Bell and Brenda Baker for joining the forum tonight. Again, they're both running for City Council Seat B. Now we're going to take a 5-minute break, and when we're back, we'll hear from Dennis Robinson, who is running unopposed for re-election at City Council Seat E. Stay with us.